You are listening to The Kevin Smith Show.
Comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
Hi, folks, and welcome to The Kevin Smith Show. Whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this gorgeous planet we call Earth, thanks for being here at The Kevin Smith Show. Some of you are joining us for the very first time tonight. Welcome aboard. We're glad to have you. And I think you'll be glad as well, and I hope you make a habit out of this. Come back each and every night, Monday through Friday, right here. Couple of quick reports, announcements, etc. Before we get into the meat of tonight's show. You know, Pennsylvania has become sort of a UFO hotspot of late, and yesterday there was a brand new report filed in Pennsylvania near Greensburg, Pennsylvania. It was a cylinder craft, and it was a businessman traveling and saw this thing. And it was about 250 feet above the ground, and he drove and maneuvered his car to the point where he was about 250 feet away from it. So he got a good close look at it, 250 feet back from the thing, and it was about 250 feet up. And it did something pretty amazing. It was cylinder-shaped, of course, and then it just tilted. So if you take the end that you would think is that's the back of it, it just tilted up so that the nose of it, if it had a nose, is pointed at the ground. And it hovered there for a while, and then it maneuvered in sort of a J shape and then flew off rapidly, accelerated, toward Greensburg. Well, pretty strange things being investigated now. And, you know, that was just yesterday. So that's hot off the presses, if you will. Okay, look. Every once in a while, we show, after this show, we keep the Internet TV channel on for a little while and show some old movies, old sci-fi movies or mystery movies, things like that. We don't do it all the time, but we do it sometimes. And I've gotten a bunch of email from folks over a period of months saying, you know, they really enjoy that. There are technical reasons why we can't do that every night. Because that computer that's sending that to you does have to be used for video editing after the show. So what I've done is I've gathered up, you remember before Star Wars, there was Star Trek. Before Star Trek, there was Flash Gordon. And so I've gathered up the 12 Flash Gordon episodes. And this will be available. It's on all 12 on a DVD. It's available to you starting tomorrow, and you want to be sure you tune in, find out how to get that. It's I think it's going to go for about $8. I'll have to check on that, but it's all 12 episodes. They only did 12 episodes, all 12 right here on one DVD, and you'll be able to get that if you like sci-fi. That's the thing to go for. Okay. And if that goes well, then we'll put some of the other movies out as well. The International Space Station, there's some news coming from that. You know, the last time they moved it, the rockets that they used to move it just didn't shut down right and caused a big vibration to go through the International Space Station. Well, now they're saying, ooh, that was not a good thing. And in fact, it may have shortened the usable life of the space station. So they're checking into that. So I'll keep you updated on that. My guest this evening is Margaret Ruth. I think you're really going to enjoy this guest. And she's one of the really popular psychics out there. And, by the way, on one of the most popular morning radio shows in the country. We'll be back right after this. And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is Margaret Ruth. Margaret Ruth is a really different sort of a psychic. And the reason I say that is because she has so many, many interests and talents beyond the world of the strange and unexplained, beyond the world of the intuitive. How many psychics, folks, have you ever heard of that are also adjunct professors of economics? Well, she is. How many have you heard of that are published on things like Huffington Post, Catalyst Magazine, Salt Lake Magazine? Well, she is. She is also a very popular feature on a very popular morning show, one of the most popular morning shows on radio in the United States. It is called Radio from Hell, and Margaret Ruth joins us this evening. Margaret, thank you for being with us, and welcome to the show.
Oh, Kevin, thank you. That was a lovely introduction. I appreciate it.
Well, I have to adjust some of the things that we're doing here because we got a brand new piece of equipment.
Oh.
And I'm getting a little bit of feedback. It's my fault, not yours. But we've got to get that worked out. Okay. I think we have it now.
Do you want me to say something?
Oh, no, you're fine. Okay. You're fine. And I think it's just that a brand new piece of equipment, just installed it this afternoon. So the audio levels, there's no way to really preset them until you broadcast. Then you can set them and they're good forever till you change the equipment.
Well, I'm happy to work with you. So,
Margaret, you're not the only psychic that we've heard of that has a radio show. Because a lot of psychics do, you certainly are the only one that I've heard of that also has a degree in economics. And if I'm not mistaken, are you working on a PhD?
Right, I am. I was working on my PhD. I'm not working on it right now.
Okay.
That is why I still continue to do some part-time instruction in economics.
Okay.
University, but that's how I came to do that, and I put that on hold a few years ago when my children were growing up, and I've not quite gotten back to it, but maybe one day I will.
How many kids do you have?
You know, where you have to finish that dissertation thing.
Well, yeah, that's true. But, you know, look, a PhD really stands for piled higher and deeper anyway.
Yeah, there you are. And I can talk a good one. I mean, if we wanted to sit and argue economics, I probably, this is what I tell my students, is the thing about learning economics is the vocabulary. And once you've got the vocabulary, you're going to win every dinner party argument you have for the rest of your life, as long as there aren't any other economists in the room.
So but you know, but that is true of a lot of fields. You know, and I think a lot of times we forget that various fields have their own glossary.
Mm-hmm.
They've got their own vocabulary.
Their jargon.
That's right. Correct. Mm-hmm. And it drives, actually, when I talk to people who are really radio people, it just drives them nuts because I use terms and descriptions of things that I made up.
Oh, I see.
and I don't generally speak their language.
Okay.
All right. Let's
Kevin language. Okay.
Well, yeah, and of course, when it comes to religion, I'm a Kevinist.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm gonna redo your religion, and I'm gonna call it the New Kevinist.
Okay. Well, listen, before we sort of delve off into anything having to do with your work as a psychic, well, it's sort of indirectly is related to that. It has to do with your radio show.
Right.
Let me tell you what I'm really interested in.
Okay.
You are taking the information that a psychic can provide.
Yes.
You're packaging that information in the vernacular, in the vocabulary of Generation Y, or the Millennium Generation.
Correct.
And so you're speaking to sort of the generation of now, okay?
Yes.
And here's what my question is.
Okay.
My question is it really that different? Are the concepts of Generation Y really that different from the generation ahead of it?
Oh, okay. Now that's okay. You're asking an interesting question, which is, I guess, why you're Kevin. But what I wanted to say is there is a definable and measurable difference between the boomer generation, which is my generation,
uh-huh,
and the upcoming, I call them the upcoming generation. They're, I would call them the younger than 35.
Mm-hmm.
So when you ask about the generation between us, a lot of writers will call that Generation X. Is that what you're thinking?
Yeah, I said Y. I'm sorry.
Well, no. The one between the now the generation, the young.
Yeah,
generation,
yeah, yeah. The millennium generation. Are they that much? Are their concepts of the world, their worldview, their concepts, are they really that different?
They're slightly different between those two generations. The what I have found with the, well, let's call them Generation Y, and roughly say we're talking about the 18 to 34-year-olds.
All right.
Does that work for you?
That works.
Okay. What I'm finding with that generation is more often than the older generations, these upcoming young people are really much more complicated thinkers. They're very happy with the complex ideas. They don't really need things dumbed down as much as maybe my generation. My generation, if you don't mind me talking about the boomer generation, is we're always the one for a sound bite or a talking head or a handy label. Much more so than younger folks, and which is, I would say, one really good example of what I'm talking about is why the younger generation could respond to the recent elections the way it did, is that they were willing to listen to a politician talk complex ideas to them and not dumb it down, and they were much more open to that. Now, I don't want to broad brush any of us, but I want to say in general, and I think that's what your question was about, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And what I want to do here is I'm just comparing notes from what I notice, and as compared to what you notice, and I'll throw mine in just a moment. What I've noticed.
The second thing that I've noticed about the younger people, what I like about them is, while able to handle more complex notions, they also want things very clean. They want a very clean explanation to things. Especially when I'm talking about, say, psychic information or ghosts, friendships or relationships, which it tends to be what we talk about on the radio show that I do here, they seek a bottom line. They want a very clean, clear explanation. They want it to make sense. Now, I would say that my generation, and I would say I'm 51, so we boomers, we were much more interested in what authorities had to say. What did the doctor say, or Dr. Laura, or Dr. Phil, or the PhD, or whomever seems to be the expert or the authority. And these younger folks are much more interested in just more common sense. They're more interested in what their experience tells them. So when I'm talking about psychic or alternative ideas to them, if I can anchor it down to common sense notion to their personal experience, they're going to listen to what I say or believe what I say because they can feel it or see it themselves, as opposed to just because I say it because I'm the expert. Does that make sense?
It does.
Okay. What do you find?
Well, and this is based on me doing this show and interacting with people via email and telephone and so forth. But over the years, what I have found is that in our generation, at least as relates to our to my show,
mm-hmm.
There are two groups. There are the data-oriented who want everything laid out, data, data, data.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are the warm and fuzzies.
Yeah.
Okay, and they really are not too interested in the data as much as they are in the concepts. And it seems like there's a pretty clear delineation. That's in the boomer generation, pretty clear delineation between these two groups.
How old are you, Kevin?
I'm 55.
Oh, okay.
I'm a boomer.
All right.
Okay. All right. Now, in the younger group that we were talking about, 18 to 34, it's not so clearly delineated into two groups as it is integrated into one worldview, so that they are conceptually oriented, but if they're not interested in the concept, they don't want to hear the data.
Mm-hmm.
If they're interested in the concept, you can feed them data all day long and they will listen.
That's very interesting.
So that's the response that I have gotten from our crowd. Okay.
Uh-huh.
And let me give you an example.
Uh-huh.
In my generation, the majority of the people who read my newsletter that are in my age group prefer to get things they want the article to be one paragraph,
okay,
or two paragraphs, okay? And that's it. As long as you give them the basic information, that's it, okay? They're not interested in a whole lot of data, and they just, you know, they just want that, unless they're in that data group, which is a minority.
Mm-hmm.
The younger people, and this is based on responses that I get back, the feedback that I get from our weekly newsletter. The younger people, 18 to 34, if they're interested in the concept, I cannot possibly give them enough additional links to check out, enough additional information. They will, if I give them five additional links to check out, I still get feedback saying, you know, is that all there is?
Where are the rest of the links?
Yeah. So that's kind of what I'm looking at. And it's pretty interesting, and it's kind of a hard balancing act, really, for me, to get enough in there. For those who are in the 18 to 34 group, and then not do overkill for the older group.
It is tricky because they really, my sense of the next generation is that they don't want it dumbed. It's a tricky balancing act, I agree. They don't want it dumbed down or some kind of soundbite label applied to the information you're giving them, and yet they want it very clear, very free of jargon and
They like the it's like bullet points.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And they
just give it to
bottom
them.
Line. They don't want to. They want you to just tell them what you're going to tell them, and it should make some kind of sense to them personally.
Now, both of us are in the communication business.
Yes.
Mine is a different type of show than yours, and yet we our genre overlaps because we deal with the paranormal and psychic phenomena. Any kind of psychic phenomena is paranormal, and I've had people argue with me about that. But look, anything for which there's no scientific explanation is by definition paranormal, and that means almost all the universe is paranormal.
Well, I'm going to agree with you there. Yes. Yes.
All right. So let's talk about you as a psychic. I mean, I guess your audience knows you're also an economist.
They do, but I don't think they find that terribly interesting. Most of the time, most of our callers on the show will call about love questions.
Mm-hmm.
It seems to be the biggest issue, and it makes the best radio because there's nothing more interesting than love.
I don't know about that. Money's pretty interesting.
Money is, but it's not that interesting of a show. When people are doing call-ins, we found when people want to hear about their career, when I'm talking and I'm going towards talking about an individual, hearing about what someone else might want to do with their careers is not as interesting, apparently, as hearing about their relationship.
All right, now let me ask you this. The morning show that you are on...
Right.
Appeals to that younger group,
yes,
right?
It does.
Okay. And so you're pretty well assured that that is who you're going to be speaking to when you sit at the mic.
Yes.
I guess there can be exceptions, but that's pretty much that you've got it in your mind that that's who you're speaking to. Relationships, let me throw this in before I ask the question. Have you read the book... or heard of the book Future Shock?
I've heard of it.
Okay.
Didn't that come out though a long time ago?
Very long time ago.
When we were young.
When we were 1970.
Yes.
And a break just took over. These are hard breaks. The mics are going dead, so we'll finish that up when we come back. All right, folks, we'll be back right after this. Don't go away. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is Margaret Ruth. And Margaret, when we went away for break, I just asked you about Alvin Toffler's book called Future Shock.
Yes.
The reason I ask about that is because he was a sociologist. He was so accurate in describing what the world was going to look like in the future, which we are now living, and much of what he described is now in our rearview mirror. One of the things that he talked about, and there's another book called Megatrends that talked about this, and that's our relationships, not just to each other, but our relationships even to the things that we think we own, would change drastically. So let me ask you this. As a psychic, have you noticed a shift in relationships? Is it really, are relationships all that different for this generation, 18 to 34? Is it really that much different than the relationships for the older group?
Okay. I think my opinion is that at core, the connections that we have with each other are are always the same. I think when you have a connection to another person, whether nowadays it's you can even have an electronic connection like you and I have right now, but these connections are always the same. They seem to me to be permanent. However, there is an outer difference, a conceptual difference in how young people perceive the rules or the trappings of how you conduct a relationship and what makes it meaningful. And I feel like that has definitely changed. So I guess I'm answering your question on two levels.
Well, yeah, and I've noticed, I would say, pretty much the same thing.
Oh, good.
So, you know, you probably are noticing it from a level different from, I mean, you do notice it from the microphone side and
sure.
taking calls, but you probably are noticing it from other levels as well. I notice it from the microphone side.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a psychic. I'm not dealing with people as personal clients and so forth. But I do notice what you have just described from the microphone side.
Mm-hmm.
The connections, when we talk about relationships, now you said that, when people call with questions about their love life, that's
yeah.
That makes for a much more interesting show for you. And I can understand that. But the differences in relationships, I notice at just about every level of society, the hot buttons, the triggers in our relationship, for instance, you mentioned with a politician.
Uh-huh.
Those are different.
Very.
And it's not the issues either. That's the issues are important, but they're important to everybody. But the triggers, the emotional triggers, are different. And, it's what activates people to get into somebody's campaign and to go to work for them. That's different in our age group. That's very different from what activates people in that 18 to 34 age group.
I completely agree.
One of the things that you do, I guess, on your show is you do readings for people. And you answer their questions about their love life.
Yes.
How much of that would you say would be? How much of your answers would you say would come from psychic sources, and how much from just common sense?
Ah, okay. I love that question. I really do. That question excites me because I've had that. This is something I've noticed, and even my listeners notice it, is that I'd say, bear with me, a third of it is pure just reading that person. My favorite antenna to use when I'm doing a radio reading is to read that person. Is I have found that if I can read a person now, it's the fastest way to predict their future because as you and your listeners probably already know, there's a huge correlation in what's going on with you now and what shows up in your future. So it's my fastest way to get a handle on somebody. And then there's a third of it that's just common sense. Like you say, one of my favorite questions, when I first started out, this really boggled my mind. This young person calls and she says, my boyfriend and I have broken up 3 times in the last 2 years. Do we have any chance? And of course, you're sitting there going, you've got to be kidding. What, the statistical odds of you make, your brain starts churning like, you have no chance whatsoever. I mean, what are you talking about? And so, and then a third of it is this blend, a third of what I get is from working with so many people so often and so frequently, you pick up on patterns or flavors. And so it's a blend of just of the psychic and maybe not common sense, but more of a common pattern that you might have seen if you keep looking at something over and over and over again. So there's a third in there that's a funny blend of places. Does that answer your question?
Mm-hmm. All right. So have you had anyone ever contact you, ask you a question, and you had, I don't know any other way to describe it. This is descriptive. So it's not going to be accurate terminology, but just a bright flash of psychic insight. Have you ever had that happen while you're on the air?
Yes, but it is not as frequent as it's not frequent. You're getting it. For me, every now and then, say once every 7 or 10 callers, I'll just get a wave of, you know, I know exactly what's going on there. And I'd say then probably every 1 out of 7 to 10 callers, I'll get blank, nothing.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're talking about that flash where you just get a clear, I need to tell you the following.
Yeah.
It does happen, but it is not the usual for me.
Okay, now,
why do you ask? It's a good question.
Well, you know, I've interviewed several psychics, and I'm always interested in how does it happen for them. And it's not the same for everybody.
No, it's not.
All right. Now, let me ask this. You do take private sittings, private clients, right?
I do.
Is it more frequent that you have that that psychic flash, that bright flash of insight? Is it more frequent when you are eyeball to eyeball with these people than it is when you're on the radio?
Well, for me, it's not. When I'm sitting with somebody or doing a phone reading, I'm approaching it actually from a really different space. Now, most of my forte or my expertise tends to be looking at people's future, and so I do what I would call channel people's guides, and that may sound very woo-woo or strange, but in general what I'm saying is everybody has an enormous amount of their own intuition and their own guidance, and some people call them angels, and the vocabulary doesn't really matter to me, but when I'm doing that, what I'm getting seems very conversational. I know that may sound, if I sound strange, you'll stop me.
You can't sound strange on my show.
For someone, it feels like we're just chatting.
Mm-hmm.
But on the radio, I feel like I want to get somewhere really fast and clear. And it feels to me like I'm using a different set of antenna.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm more willing to have just a clairaudient or clairvoyant or clairsentient kind of information pop in. So that's the first time I've ever gotten asked that question. It's a good one.
Well, thank you. I have a few more good ones, but we...
Okay.
Well, what I want to sort of dive into now, I wanted people... who are listening, to sort of get a feel for who you are and where you're coming from as a psychic. Okay, now I want to get into a little bit of how did you get there? I mean, it's a very unusual combination, or at least I think it is, and I don't say that in a critical way. I'm just saying it's an unusual combination to have a psychic who's on the radio on a very popular morning show, who is also a professor of economics, and writes for Huffington Post. So how did we get there? When did you find out that you were a psychic?
Well, with me, it's gradual. I would say that I started self-teaching myself Tarot, T-A-R-O-T,
mm-hmm.
which is a deck of cards that can be used for divination or intuitive purposes. And I was enjoying teaching myself that material. And then I was a PhD student at the time. And so I thought, oh, I'll raise some extra cash by giving readings to people. And when I was giving readings to people, then I was getting all this extra information coming in at that time. And so what I would say is, for me, it was that moment of sitting down with people I didn't know, putting myself out there and just opening myself up to read, that I was aware that I was getting all this extra information around them. So to this day, I will actually use my tarot cards quite a bit as my way of starting a reading or getting going.
All right, now, so when you started not because you were having these bright psychic flashes of insight, but because of the tarot cards, right?
Yeah, mm-hmm. exactly. I was interested in them. And I've always been interested in, I think one of the reasons I wanted to get a lot of education, and because not only I was working on that PhD, but I had already gotten my master's. You know, I've been always in school. And I think I have always been wanted to know. And I've always wanted to know a lot, and I've always wanted to know what is the correct answer. And so I've always been reaching for ways to understand and get a hold of what's going on in this universe. And I would assume that there are a lot of your listeners who are the same way. And so I'm very open to more than book learning as a way of understanding what truth is. But one of the things that economics has done for me is I've often...
Can I get you to hold that till we get back? We have to take a break.
Sure.
Ladies and gentlemen, more with Margaret Ruth right after this. Don't go away. We are back. Okay. I had to cut you off because the break was taking over. I want to give you the opportunity to finish up what you were saying, and so the floor is yours.
Oh, I was just talking about how I thought economics and predicting the future psychically were actually quite similar. And the reason is that when you're trying to forecast any kind of future, most of the time you'll go to some sort of statistical or econometric theory to run your algorithm to try to find out what might be going on in the future. And it's interesting to me that when you go to forecast the future using your psychic antenna, I'm not sure that it's that much different. I'm not sure that the way human futures work, that there's too much different, because most people tend to continue on going on in the direction that they're going. So, and that's so natural. It just seems like common sense. So when you go to psychically pull up someone's future, it's really not that. It's very, let me say it this way, it's more unusual to find somebody is changing their path or doing something dramatically different than that they just keep going on in the same direction that they're headed. And I think that one of the reasons I've ended up doing more readings that tend to be more channeling people's guides from that perspective is there's a lot of people who don't actually want to keep going on in the direction that they're going, and they want to know more information about how can I change that? How can I create a different future? What would be more fun for me, as opposed to just getting some very dry, well, this is where you're headed, and this is what's going to happen.
I find...
That's how it evolved. Sorry.
Now, what I'm about to say is based not only on the show here, but on having a lifelong career as a cop.
Ah.
But I find that... almost everyone wants different results, but almost no one wants to change the procedures.
Yeah.
And so they keep doing the same things over and over and hoping for different results, being disappointed when they don't get them. And there's a song that we play here on the show from time to time that says, one definition of madness is doing the same thing over and over and expecting different results. And that is madness. You can't have the same process and get a different result. You repeat the process, you repeat the result.
Yes.
But it's just human nature that even though we know that change is the only real constant in life, it's human nature that we resist change. Why do you think that is?
Oh, that's such a good question. Part of it is, and now I'm gonna answer that on a very metaphysical or psychic level. Mm-hmm. Part of it is that there's an enormous amount of joy or wonderfulness there is to being human. And what I mean by that is three-dimensional, fleshy, flesh and blood, boned, sensual human being with the five senses in this three-dimensional space. It's quite a sensual and interesting job there is being an individual human. And we get, our bodies are the last part of us that really want to change or that can change. Our bodies get very used to having certain sights, sounds, situations around them and really don't like to change. They get very invested in the feelings and the senses that are around them. So when we go to say when I quit smoking, it's a good example of my brain and my heart and my spirit all knew that I needed to quit smoking, and I knew it, and I felt it, and my body is the last one on the train. It's very happy to contentedly sit and enjoy the experience of smoking. And I think most, in one very real psychic metaphysical sense, that being physical is very exciting, and we get very invested in exactly what we've already got. And so it is hard to get all of us on the train to change sometimes. It's not a complete answer, but that I think is part of it.
Well, it's, I think, a good answer, and it's not one that, it's not a question that I can answer.
Yeah.
I asked because I wanted to know what you thought about it, and not because I have an answer.
Yeah, exactly.
And look, you know, I'm saying this is part of human nature, but I'm not excluding me from that. I'm the same way. I want different results, but there are things that I just don't want to change, even though I am aware that without that change, the results are not going to change. I'm not comfortable with making that change. And you just about have to dynamite me into change. And that's not because I'm older. I've been that way since I was... Well, as long as I can remember, once I find something that seems to work for me, even if something else would work better, I don't want to change from what already seems to be working. And that relates back to what we were talking about with this younger generation from 18 to 34, and the difference that they exhibit in their approach to relationships. And here's how it relates back. They're not as ready to adopt, in my opinion, they're not as ready to adopt the procedures and processes that we've put in place, because they don't see that they're really working that well. We're killing the planet.
You have hit the nail on the head. It's absolutely true.
Once they do adopt something, they are as difficult to get to change as we are. They become as entrenched.
Younger children.
Yeah, they become as entrenched as we, but they're not. You know, they're not as quick to adopt our procedures and processes and the norms that we think are norms.
Yes.
Because they don't see that it's really working that well, and I have to be honest with you, I don't see that it's really working that well.
I would say that they're smart to notice that. Our boomer constructs of how you conduct relationships and what equal meaningful relationships and have failed many people. I agree.
Now, I find it interesting. See, traditionally, when people had problems with relationships, or they, maybe not a problem, but they just felt like it was not as full and satisfying as it should be, maybe they would go to a minister, a clergyman, for counseling, or maybe they would go to a psychologist or a psychiatrist or a marriage counselor. And that's sort of traditionally where people have gone. Back before that, people went to each other.
Mm-hmm.
And talk to each other, and then I don't know how, but sort of somehow the clergy has got ensconced as the pros on this, and then the psychologists and the psychiatrists, and you know. With this younger generation, it seems to me that they turn less to the pros and more to the paranormal.
I do agree. The younger generation is much more open to different ways of understanding the world than I say my generation is. Remember what you said earlier about talking about the data people versus the, say, the concept people? I think
right.
That's how you did it.
Uh-huh.
I say that's true for our generation, very, very much so. And then for these younger folks, let me give you an example. They're very much more open to the paranormal or different ways of understanding the nature of truth and being alive and these huge concepts. And one of the things that I've noticed is when I have a lot of clients all year round, and in my age group, men my age and your age are less of 25% of how many younger men I get, meaning...
Margaret, I hate to do it. A break's taking over. We'll get into that as soon as we come back.
Okay.
All right, folks. We will be back right after this, so don't go away, all right? Welcome back. For those of you who are just now joining us in this second hour, my guest this evening is Margaret Ruth, and we are talking about her work as a psychic. And we're going a little bit deeper here than you normally get to go with psychics, and we're getting a whole lot of background about her work. And you were talking about... something you just started talking about, something about the younger men and how they see things.
You had brought up a really good point about the difference of with the younger generation versus, say, ours.
Yeah.
And I did want to say that just statistically that the under 35 group, I'm going to have so much more young men come see me, purchase a private reading with me by probably a factor of three than men my age. The younger men, I just get more of them. They're more interested in what their guides have to say and what their they're so much more interested in this source of information for their own benefit or how to use it to make their life better than would have been true from my age group. Although, of course, as you know, there's plenty of men my age or in the boomer generation that do that, but there's just so many more in the younger generation. And I thought what you said was quite true.
All right. I'm going to open up the telephone lines and allow folks to call in if they have a question or a comment. You and I will continue to talk, but if someone has a question or a comment for Margaret Ruth, feel free to give us a call. The telephone number is 1-623-237-3814. 1-623-237-3814. Are you willing to, if someone calls in and wants a reading, are you willing to do those?
Do you want to do those on the radio?
If you're willing to do them, it's okay with me. Up to you.
You know, I am willing to do it. I'm hesitating because they could bog us down. I guess that's
okay.
Why I would say that.
All right.
But I would leave it up to you, I would suppose. However, if people want a personal private reading or they would like to contact me, you can. I'm on Facebook, or you can go to www.margaretruth.com or any of those ways, and you can email me or contact me. So this is certainly available to people. But I'll leave it up to you, Kevin.
Well, okay. Let's just say then that we will not do private readings or readings. But if you have a question or comment, please feel free to call. And caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, Kevin. This is Brent from Wyoming.
Okay, Brent. We've got this new equipment. I'm getting feedback, but go ahead.
Okay, I got the echo.
Yeah, we can't hear you at all.
Ruth, many years ago, friend of mine from Washington D.C. area sent me an email because her marriage was in trouble. I told her, I said, you know, because her husband and her didn't talk a lot. I said, you know, what you've got to do is understand that a marriage without conversation is like a comic book without pictures. You've got to talk.
That's good.
Yeah, that is good.
So I'm just thinking if you, when you're doing these love things on your morning radio show, you might just mention that once in a while. Said, guys, you've got to talk.
Very funny. I like that. That's a good one. Although I have to tell you, there are exceptions to that rule.
True.
But in general, that's a good. I like that. Thank you.
All right, Brent. Thanks for the call.
That's a good saying. A good maxim.
All right. We will try to bring this one online. And that one's gone. Okay. Folks, I have to apologize to you about the audio situation. There's no way I can control that except as we do it, okay? And I don't know why we were getting an echo from Brent. Telephone line is open, 623-237-3814. And let's go back to the telephone line. And caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yes, it's Kevin from North Bay, Ontario. Can you hear me fine?
We're hearing you fine. No echo. Everything's just as it should be.
Wow, and on this phone on top of that. Well, an amazing show here tonight. especially the psychics. Margaret?
Yes.
You're talking about the young people who are going to be coming to ask you a lot of questions.
Yes.
I'm currently reading a book on the Indigo Star and Crystal Kids. Could they be with some of the people that are going to be looking to you for some answers?
I know exactly what you're talking about. There certainly has been a lot of mystical talk or work or discussion about this new generation and what they're going to bring to our mass consciousness. And the word indigo is a super way to refer them, because it does imply that they look at human existence and human experience from a different way, from me. Kevin in my age group, I guess, is one way to put it. I don't know how old you are, Kevin. How old are you?
I'm 24. I'll be 25 next month. So I fall on the age range of the indigo kids. The star kids are said to be born in the 90s. And of course, the crystal kids in the the crystal kids were born in the 90s, and the star kids born in the 2000s.
Yeah, and there's some of the indigos were supposed to come start around mid 1980s,
mm-hmm.
which is really what I am seeing. The 18 year old and up to about 34. I really feel like they're just a completely different group than the generations before the Generation X and the Boomer.
All right, how are they different?
How do I find them different?
Yeah.
I just feel like they are more willing to negotiate their life or their world on their own terms, and I want to put a real clear demarcation between my age group, because when we were growing up, we would go to the experts, and we would go to the a person had to have a certain many initials after their name to have credence or credibility, and these young people are not willing to listen to what the authority or the experts say. They're willing to listen to them, but make up their mind independent of that authority. So it's a more teamwork, a more personal experiential base of knowledge that they bring than my age group. Less hierarchical, more.
Well, let me run an experiment here, Kevin. You're in the age group we're talking about. And would you say that just because a guy or a lady has a bunch of degrees, that doesn't really carry a lot of weight with you in what they say, but you weigh what they say, you weigh the content of what they say?
You're talking about me?
Yes.
Well, from what I read about the indigo...
No. I'm asking you, would you weigh the person... Would you say, for instance, if I came on the show every night introduced as Dr. Kevin Smith, would that be impressive to you and you would listen to what I say more? Or the doctor doesn't matter, you just weigh the content of what I say, you personally?
Well, I have always said you don't need a piece of paper. You don't need a piece of paper to say that you're an expert.
Okay. Well, I agree, and of course, you, Kevin, you have heard me say that just because a person has credentials doesn't mean they're accurate.
Yeah.
Exactly, because people in higher places can lie and tell disinformation as well as anybody else can.
I will say my experience in academia is that it is not a given that a bunch of initials makes for a smart person.
Absolutely.
It's a good indicator, though. I mean, it indicates quite a bit, but it's not an assurance.
But all right, I don't know if you remember Dr. Carla Turner. A lot of people bought her books on alien abduction because they had the doctor beside her name.
Oh. And I'm thinking that your generation is going to be less likely to do that. Mm-hmm. than the older generations. That's my impression.
Okay, and one last question. What does all these things, do they have to do about a 2012 shift or not? And I'll take the answer off the air to...
Okay, before you go, I don't understand the question, so restate the question.
About the Mayan calendar.
Yeah, I understand that, but what is your question about that?
If the 2012, if there is going to be a 2012 shift, and if it's affecting... if it's causing the emergence of these people that are going to be asking a lot of questions, and
yes,
I'll take the answer up here.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Thanks for the call. Yes. All right. What about that?
Well, absolutely. Everything that's been the breakdown of institutions that we've been seeing for about 28 years, starting with some of the banking failures and some of the bear with me, in the 70s and the 80s, some of the economic and institutional failures that started then and led up to some huge monolithic institutions breaking apart and losing credence with large swaths of at least the American population. Let's talk about banking and the Catholic Church and examples like that.
Mm-hmm.
And these things happening around the turn of the millennium, it's not accidental, and I hope no one's worried that the world is going to end in 2012. Everything's shifting, and it seems to me to be shifting very nicely, in my opinion.
All right. Let's go back to the telephone. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Good evening, Dr. Smith. You do have a doctorate, from what I understand.
Yes, I do. I don't wear it on my shirt sleeves.
Yes. Now, this is Terry from Ohio.
Hi, Terry.
I would like to ask your guest, I was just curious, from, say, back from the prophets to the Oracle of Delphi to... Notre Dame to that guy, I can't think of his name, is slept and had predictions.
Yeah, Edgar Cayce.
Up to today, where we have Major Ed Danes and today's psychics. What are they all tapping into? Is there a difference? And I'll listen off air. Thanks.
All right. Thanks for the call.
Gosh, that's a good question.
It is.
What does everybody... And the reason it's I find it a good question is because it gets at the essence of the perhaps the difference between personal consciousness and mass consciousness and, say, universal consciousness are some of the vocabulary words that we could use of say, if Kevin Smith and I wanted to sit down and we wanted to predict the future... exactly where do we want to put our antenna? Do we want to predict just Kevin's individual future? Do we want to talk about the future of the United States or even go bigger about what's going to happen with our planet on major scales? And so my answer to the question is that there are many places to stick your psychic antenna and I'm not sure they're all going to match.
So it really sort of depends on the level of information you're seeking.
That's the way I would answer the question, mm-hmm. Yes.
All right, let's go back to the phone. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, this is Bob from California.
Hi, Bob.
Hi, Bob.
Hi, I had a quick question for the guest.
Okay.
This is Ruth. Well, it was really quick, and then I'll hang up.
Okay.
What do you think happens when you die, and what do you think God really is? Thank you.
Oh, quick, good questions, Bob. They're quick but big. All right. I'm glad you're on that side of the question. You handle that.
Okay. Let's see. In a paragraph, what happens when you die? Actually, it's highly individual. Each individual experiences their death actually very much according to their expectations. So because of that, a person of one certain religion will experience death in a very different way than another religion. if you expect all your family to come meet you, or the angels to greet you, or the lights to shine, or what have you, that tends to be what happens. So each individual's experience of death is quite unique. But the truth is all that all your consciousness remains. It still exists, and the thing that happens is that your body is just not operating. So whatever your personal consciousness experience is at that time is going to be quite unique, but essentially you just go back to source consciousness or bigger consciousness. And what is the nature of God? I think you would call it ultimate source, or God is a very strange concept, but I have to say it's original consciousness. I guess this would be the best way to describe it.
You know, I'm going to open the phone line again in just a moment, but I've got it turned off right at this moment because I wanted us to have time to deal with that very, very quick but huge question.
Yes.
I'm not a religious person. Now, this is the first time that you've been on the show with me, so you don't have any reason why you would know that. I'm not a religious person. I'm not an atheist either. But I'm definitely not religious. Now, having said that, I read all kinds of books, all kinds of ancient texts in several different languages. And I find one of the most interesting things that's ever been said about who God is so metaphysical that it's just metaphysical. You can't describe it any other way. But it's in the Bible. It's in the New Testament. It never gets taught this way, or seldom gets taught this way, and it seldom even gets mentioned this way. But on the question of who is God, in John chapter 1, verse 1, it says, "In the beginning was the Word." Well, that's what it says in English, but in Greek it says, "In archein halagos," in the beginning was the logos. And there's two Greek words that are translated as word. One is rhema, and rhema, that's just the words like you and me are using. So when I read, it says, in the beginning was, or actually in ancients, was the logos. I wondered, why did they translate that as word when they brought it into English? So I went back and started doing some study on what did the Greeks understand logos to be. And if you put a modern English translation to logos, an accurate modern English translation, it's consciousness.
Okay.
So in the beginning was the consciousness. The consciousness was God. The consciousness was with God. The consciousness was God. The consciousness made everything.
Sure.
Now see, that is such a metaphysical statement. And it's right there in that book people tuck up under their arm and carry to church with them every Sunday. And it pretty much takes the mystery out of the question in that what was in the beginning? The consciousness.
Awareness, yes.
Mm-hmm.
And but it is interesting because you and I are obviously in clear agreement on ideas on this, or if you happen to buy that idea that consciousness was the original source of everything.
Mm-hmm.
But it does say that consciousness predates matter, which is a big scientific question, but that is a belief that instead of matter predating consciousness, that consciousness evokes matter and material and manifestation prior. So it is terribly metaphysical and very spiritual way of looking at things.
Well, even in that verse that I just quoted,
yes,
it says, and the consciousness or the logos created everything. Apart from the consciousness, nothing was created that has been created. And so it says that the consciousness predates matter.
Yes.
And that's, as I said, that it's just the most amazing verse when you read what it actually says, it's a totally metaphysical verse, and it says consciousness is a priori.
Mm-hmm.
It's causal. It's not a result of matter. It's causal. It causes matter.
And I'm sure that there are those that would debate it, but it happens to be my belief or my understanding that is indeed how it works, is that your consciousness and my consciousness predate our existence. And then, of course, that does answer a little bit of, in my way, the question for the caller, is that consciousness does not go away just because the body did.
That's true. Let's go back to the phone line. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yes, good evening. This is Kevin from Northern Alberta calling.
Hello, Kevin from Northern Alberta.
Hi, Kevin and Margaret.
Hello.
I wanted to ask Margaret, do you use any certain tools to get to the ether of the consciousness, such as a crystal ball or tea leaves or candles or...
This is a fun question, right up my alley. I like to use tarot cards. That's what I use.
Oh, you do?
Mm-hmm. And then
okay.
I do teach tarot at the University of Utah, and that's fun. I enjoy teaching that quite a bit.
That's interesting.
What I like to use. However, many of my students don't always end up using tarot. Sometimes they end up not using it at all, or they use different tools completely, and it's very individual. But for me,
sure,
that's what I like.
Okay. And what about meditation? Do you practice any particular form of meditation?
Not particular form. I'm trying to get better at meditation. So,
yeah, me too. I generally fall asleep.
Yeah,
anyways, great show tonight. I was going to ask one more question about the younger youth today. Do you find that they're coming to you more and more?
They like me. Yeah, they come to me quite a bit, and I firmly believe it is because they have a propensity to enjoy getting information from metaphysical sources, and that they also, and I think they also appreciate me because I don't dumb it down, and I keep it really clean and clear, and usually, and I don't know if you've noticed this.
Folks, we have to take a break, all right? It always interrupts us at the most interesting point. But thanks for the call, Kevin. And folks, we'll be back right after this break, so don't go away, all right? Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. We're talking with psychic economist Margaret Ruth. And the telephone lines are open if you have a question or a comment for her. This has been and will continue to be a much deeper kind of a conversation with a psychic than we normally get to have, and I really appreciate it. But let's go to the telephone line. And caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, Kevin. It's Boomer from British Columbia. How are you tonight?
Outstanding, Boomer. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. I'd like to ask your guest if she is psychically aware of any alien visitations at all.
I am not, no. It's not something that I tune into.
So you've never actually felt them at all or...
No,
like that?
I have no antenna for them.
Huh.
I also don't have any antenna for ghosts. If you wanted me to look for ghosts in your house, I'd have to switch. I'd have to put myself in a different place and put up that particular antenna. But usually,
yeah.
I'll go through my life and not pick up on any ghosts at all or anything like that.
Okay.
Fair enough. It's just antenna that I don't put up much.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Well, you're very welcome.
Hey, Boomer, before you go, are you still with me?
Oh, yeah. Oh, about Doug?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll send you a flash message tonight, Kev.
Okay. Very good. Thank you. All right. Let me ask you about people who come to you on a private basis. Does anybody ever come to you and say, look, I think I've maybe been abducted by extraterrestrials? Have you ever had anything like that happen?
No.
No?
Mm-mm.
Well, we'll have to refer some to you.
Yeah, but I would just refer them back to you. So I would send them to the expert. Like yourself.
Well, I'm not an expert on that. And in fact, I'm not an expert on anything. That's really true. I know a great deal about a great many things, but I'm not an expert on much of anything except how to do this show.
And I'd like to think that someone who had that experience, they probably would not come to me because I would not be able to give them what they need, which is information from people who have also experienced that and a deeper understanding of the experience that they've gone through. The only thing that I would be able to do for them is read them psychically and read how they're doing and what this might lead to in their future.
We talked about one of the callers brought up 2012. And talked about that just a little. I want to go back to that. One of the things that, because of this show and because of the calls I get and the emails that I get, and I get tons of email every day, one of the things that I have picked up on is that there's a significant number of people who are very apprehensive about 2012. For some of them, they think it's going to be some sort of earthbuster type of cataclysm is going to happen. Some of them think that it's just going to be very intense things happening, not an earthbuster that wipes out the planet, but very intense things like maybe a whole bunch of volcanoes and tidal waves and polar shift and things like that, and times are just going to be horrendous. You didn't seem to have that view of 2012 in the answer.
No, I don't.
Okay, what is your view? What do you think is going to happen?
I think 2012 is going to be very much like 2011 and 2013. I think it's going to be important because so many of the last 10 and bear with me, I'd say the 90s and through 2010 and 2012 do contain a huge shift in mass consciousness. And you and I and the listeners, we're all in the middle of it. And I think it's really exciting.
I think it's happening already.
Yeah. And I just think that when the Mayans did their calendar, that's when they happened to be done with it. And we may be entering a brand new consciousness or way that we want to conduct our lives on this planet on a different level, be more open to paranormal ways of understanding our existence. I think that many, many good things are going to come into it, so I feel very calm.
This may get too deep, but I don't think, not for you, but it may get boring for people, but I'll do it quickly.
Okay.
I said earlier that from my point of view, from my understanding of what the definition of paranormal is, we live in a paranormal universe. And we were talking about how consciousness predates matter. Okay, now that means then that matter is the offspring of consciousness.
That's right.
Okay. That means then that it is paranormal. Even matter is paranormal. Because consciousness is falls into that definition of paranormal. The scientists that are really working to try and see all the way back to the origin of the universe have gotten so far back that they've run into a wall of static, if you will. They've gone so far back that they have now run into a radio signal that is six times stronger than all the other radio signals coming from every star, galaxy, pulsar, etc. You add the whole universe together, and they've run into this radio signal that's six times stronger. So they cannot go back further. They've gotten back far enough that they've run into this, and they can't get back any further. Do you think maybe they just ran into consciousness out there?
Into God?
Yeah.
If they asked me, if the scientists wanted to call me and ask me, I'd say yes. And I'd also say that as long as you've got instrumentation and that are... that it's only in three dimensions and five sense, that's the arena that they're measuring in, it's going to be impossible to do. Now, the nice thing about physicists is they're always working in multi-dimensions, and that's a good thing.
You know, this is pretty interesting. Dr. Michio Kaku, I don't know if you know who he is, but Dr. Michio Kaku is, in our day, sort of the Einstein of our day. He's the father of the string theory in quantum physics. His physics textbooks are used in every major university in America. And he's been here on the show, and that is one of the most open-minded people I've ever run into. He is just phenomenally open-minded. And, he would not have any problem with anything that we've talked about here this evening. He would think in terms of how that could fit into quantum physics, but he's totally open to it all. And now that they have run into that wall of radio signal, I would love to have him back and see what he would say about that. I think, that they have no explanation for that. The scientists don't know where that's coming from. They don't know what it possibly could be, and so that makes it paranormal by definition, and I think it'd be fascinating to hear what he has to say about that. Let's go back to the phone line and caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling? Hello, caller. All right, the caller is not with us. The telephone number, folks, is 623-237-3814. 623-237-3814. And we'll be more than happy to take your call if you have a question or a comment for our guest. And I grant you it is quite a deep discussion we're having this evening compared to what we normally do. But, that's not really true, but it's deeper than we normally get to go with a psychic.
Well, it's true. Now, see, when I'm doing my show, usually when I do a fabulous, I love the morning show that I'm allowed to be a guest on. I'm very honored. It's a fabulous morning show. It's different than a lot of the usual shows. It's very satirical. You have to be really smart to keep up with it. It doesn't have any of the jingles or the stunts. And when I'm on, basically we're just answering people's a lot of love and relationship questions. So I really never get asked these questions of, what is psychic information and where are you coming from on this? So it's kind of, it's really nice for me. It's a lovely treat.
One of the guests that we've had on this show is Dr. Gerald Epling. Now, Dr. Gerald Epling is an expert in memory, and he does research on memory. But, I mean, that's his day job. He also has done research with plants and has discovered and has been able to measure this, actually. He has discovered that plants actually give a measurable response to our thoughts. Now, that opens up a whole lot about consciousness. Are plants conscious? Apparently so. He would not agree with that, I don't think, but I've argued with him about that on the air. To me, that indicates if they can receive our thoughts and give a response that can be measured scientifically, they are operating with consciousness at some level, and that's pretty bizarre. All right.
It's tricky because what happens there is you get a huge vocabulary problem because some people will only insist that consciousness is a human trait.
Yeah.
And basically they're identifying consciousness as what you and I experience as human beings. And yet, in the bigger stream of things, there is such a thing as rock consciousness and plant consciousness. It's their own particular consciousness. And what I'm saying here is that all matter has its own identity or its own consciousness. And so then we get in a big... To me, that seems obvious.
Well, I think, by the way, caller, just hang on. I'm going to get to you in just a moment. I think consciousness just is.
Yeah.
And then consciousness produces everything that we call matter. And because it produces it, all matter is associated with consciousness and can respond to it at some level. We have to take a break. We'll be back right after this. Caller, hang in there. We'll get to you first up after the break. All right, folks, we'll be back. We're back. We're on Final Approach. Let me see if the caller is still with us. Caller, are you still with us?
Yep, still here.
Outstanding. Your first name and where are you calling from?
Charles in Michigan.
Okay, you're very, very muffled. I don't know if we can understand you, but we'll try. What was your first name again?
Charles in Michigan.
Okay, and your question or comment?
My question was, how does Margaret equate trying to collect my thoughts on it. This holographic universe principle that scientists are starting to look into, as far as, like, psychic perception goes, I don't know if she's studied the holographic universe theories or not. I guess you'd have to ask her that for me, but...
Oh, she can hear you. Okay, what do you think, Margaret? What about a holographic universe?
That was my question.
All right. Thanks for the call.
Yep.
I think he's asking a fairly complex question, and I'm not sure it links perfectly, because the minute we entertain the idea of energy, a universe larger than that we can measure with our three-dimensional instruments, we're already then making a space where psychic information, telepathy, psychometry, clairaudient, any kind of psychic information that you and I can think of, that we're already admitting the existence of it. If we're admitting that the universe is more than three-dimensional time-space reality, So I'm not sure that there's a conflict between a holographic universe and psychic information. As a matter of fact, they dovetail quite well. And it does proclaim that physical three-dimensional human beings in space-time continuum have, every single one of them, the ability to have access to information that transcends space and time. And I would say that that's absolutely true.
Well, let me do a little experiment with you.
Okay.
And audience, you join in with this, okay? You'll enjoy this, I think. What I'd like for you to do is I would like for you to think, I want you to picture in your mind the most wonderful place you could possibly go. I mean, for you, this is like the number, if you could go there right now, okay? I want you to picture it in your mind. Whatever it is, wherever it is, just picture it. Get it really pictured clear in your mind. Okay. Have you done that?
I have.
Okay. Now let me ask you this question. You have just consciously created that place in your mind. You saw it. You saw its details, its colors. And if you do this really well, you'll even smell whatever is there. The pine trees or you'll feel the very crisp, clear, cold air on top of a snow-capped mountain or whatever it is that you pictured. You created that in your mind. In your mind, you created a holographic, quasi-holographic projection. Would you agree?
Oh, I agree, yes. Wait, you know I agree.
All right. Now, if consciousness just is, then everything it pictures would be somewhat a holographic projection, and it pictured me.
Mm-hmm.
It pictured you. It pictured all the things that are around us. And so that's why I say that matter is a result of consciousness, because as consciousness thinks about these things, they happen.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
It does to me. I firmly believe in conscious creation.
Mm-hmm.
Very much that
now,
what we vibrate, we get. Yeah.
Now, at our level, all of these things seem real. This desk in the studio seems real to me because it is real to me. But it is real within the context of what consciousness made possible.
Right, because most of it is actually empty space.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
Theoretically, it shouldn't be able to hold all that stuff up. But we've agreed in our this particular continuum that this is how we're going to dissolve. How these are the rules. This is how we're going to work it.
Mm-hmm.
And so, therefore, our desks hold stuff up, and our doors shut, and we can't walk through them. But then, there's always the ones that can to remind us that not everything is as it appears.
Well, and see, I don't find this to be woo-woo at all. I find this to be very much in line with quantum physics.
Sure.
Quantum physics is sort of a scientific way of looking at the stuff we're calling paranormal.
Mm-hmm.
And it tries to come up with some sort of formula that we can explain how this happens.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things I'm fond of saying is the universe did not go to the same universities the PhDs did. It does what it does, and it pulls surprises every day. And it doesn't operate according to our alleged laws of physics. It does what it does when it wants to. And every day we're hearing about, we're going to have to rewrite our theory of planet formation,
sure.
Or we're going to have to rewrite our theory of supernovas. And the reason is the universe has pulled a surprise on them that didn't fit with the alleged laws of physics. And so the more we use science and science tools to examine the universe, the more paranormal it becomes.
It's kind of exciting, actually. Science is science can be really interesting as long as it understands its limitations, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to tell your listeners this, too, that because what Kevin is saying is profoundly true, is that your personal individual consciousness has an enormous amount to do with the things that go around you and into your future, because in talking about people's personal futures, which has been my forte, most people want to know, what can I do about my future? What if I don't like what you say, Margaret Ruth? What, you know, can't I change it? And the answer is, yes, of course you can. It would be ridiculously boring to be a human being and not think that you don't control or create your own future, and that an examination of where you are now personally, your personal consciousness, your own vibration is another way to put it. There's a lot of us mystical ways to put it, but an examination of your now has an enormous amount to do with what your future is shaping up, and I think people like to know that it's not predetermined. And
this is one of, I'm glad to hear you say that, because this is one of the criticisms that I have of some psychics,
mm-hmm.
is they say this is going to happen. Okay, problem with that is, it's going to happen if I don't make some changes, or someone else that's involved doesn't make some changes. But all those changes are possibilities that are in play.
Sure.
And so maybe on a grand scale, we can say that the future is heading in a certain direction. But I'm just one drop of water in the river. You know, and things can change. Well, Margaret, we have reached the end of the show. I want to thank you so much for being with us.
Well,
it's been fascinating.
I've enjoyed it tremendously, and I hope you'll have me back one day.
I certainly will. If you will, just stay on the line with me a moment as I close the show.
All right.
Okay, folks, that's a wrap. Boy, that's deeper than we ever get with psychics, and wasn't it a great insight? My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do, too. You can call me whatever you want. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.